Robert Earnshaw, striker and the greatest somersaulter this side of Beth Tweddle. 481 career appearances for Cardiff, West Brom, Norwich, Forest, basically any team hoping to get out of the Championship, plus Maccabi Tel Aviv. Cardiff's third top scorer of all time, Wales's eighth top goal scorer of all time, the only player who has scored a hat-trick in all of the top four English divisions, the League Cup, the FA Cup, and for their country, you're welcome, pub quiz fans, and, of course, author. But let's see what the book club thought of his book, Ernie, My Life at Cardiff City, in today's episode of Football Book Club.
It's like jazz. It's about the words he's not saying.
There was a bit of it that really reminded me of, you know, the Destiny's Child song, Survivor.
I guess maybe feet are bad shoes, in a way.
That is a quote for the ages. Feet are bad shoes.
I'm sick of these pranks. Honestly, I'm so sick of them. They're not funny. They're just mean.
Jack's excited.
We're doing it.
We're reading Robbie. He was called Robbie, right? People called him Robbie Earnshaw at times, right?
I think so.
Everything's very formal in this book.
Yeah, Earnshaw.
Robert? I remember Robert Earnshaw. Robbie Earnshaw. But also Robert. Maybe he went through a bit of a rebrand. Remember Joey Barton just tried to start being called Joseph Barton for a while.
Yeah.
To be taken more seriously.
And then Killer. Killer Barton.
I was saying before, I think every Welsh player at some point was contractually obliged to be called Robbie instead of Robert. Making them more like, cool and fun.
Yeah. Yeah, there were but there was also Robert Page. He was a Robert. He's not a Robbie.
That's true. Robbie Page. He would punch your lights off if you call him Robbie Page.
Yeah, we're not calling... Don't call him that. He listens. Anyway, hello and welcome to Football Book Club, the only book club where, instead of literary classics, each episode we read another footballer's autobiography. Less Charlotte's Web, more Howard's Web.
You know what? It wasn't worth the build-up. That isn't the fault of the person, because it was a perfectly serviceable joke.
I think it's very good. I think it's the best one we've had so far,
like
perhaps.
That. Not that,
I think it's very good. It's creative.
It wins for the mental image of Howard Webb at the centre of a big web.
Yeah, it does. That is a funny image.
And also, does Charlotte die at the end of Charlotte's Web? Spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
Jack, you know I don't read real books.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, she gets a £5 million move to West Brom at the end.
Happy ending.
To be fair, she'd be a good goalkeeper with Charlotte.
Yeah. Yeah. There we go. That's almost exactly the same joke as that Dracula one that we always make on the show.
Actually, Tash should want things to go into her net.
Very good point. All right. Thanks to Matthew J. Swindle for that thinker. I'm James Budd, and over the weeks, we'll be reading classics such as Kevin Kilbane's Killer and Francis Benali, The Autobiography.
Are we ever going to read Kevin Kilbane's Killer?
I don't think we will. We haven't read any of those things. But today, we're reading a football book club first. Football book club first. A football autobiography novella, I would describe it as. Robert Earnshaw's 2012 book, Ernie, My Life at Cardiff City. And joining me to read it, as always, are Jack Bernhardt.
Hi.
James Balgen.
Hello.
And Natasha Frisco.
Hello.
What are we all doing?
Good.
Pretty good.
I don't think any book is referred to as a novella, apart from this one and Ernest Hemingway.
The Old Man and the Sea?
Yeah.
And there was always one we used to read called, is that short? I don't know. A Diamond as Big as the Ritz by Fitzgerald. Oh god. Yeah, by Robert Earnshaw.
I wanted a diamond as big as the Ritz, so I got one.
That is a good
you know what? People who haven't listened to this episode yet, that's a good reference.
You're gonna go back and you're gonna enjoy that.
If this
joke
is your second
later.
Time round on the podcast, you'll be like, good reference. Good, I get it.
Good reference. Very good reference. We mentioned the size of the book. Mm-hmm. Let's not beat around the bush. It's a tiny little boy. It's a teeny tiny little boy.
This is exactly how long a football book should be.
Perfect.
Nice bit about his childhood, into how he got into football, which is actually interesting for once as well.
Mm.
Wham bam, thank you, ma'am. I know about his life. I think he's a nice guy. It felt a little bit like a school project. Like I can imagine there being drawings at some point of him, you know, in crayon. This is what I did in my 6 weeks holidays. But I loved it.
And Tash, that's you done for the episode now.
Yeah, you've got your whole review.
Bam, bam. That's perfect. Yeah. You did an Earnshaw. You did an Earnshaw. Why make a podcast an hour when it can be 2 minutes? But no, it is. It's 103 pages in about size 18. Yeah. 30 fonts.
I swear the font gets bigger as it goes on.
It really does. The last page is just three letters. Yeah, it's all about, as you probably guessed the title, My Life at Cardiff City. It's all about his return to Cardiff, and it's pretty much all about them, except, and I genuinely mean this, about two pages throughout the rest of his career.
Yeah.
And I honestly think it is two pages. So that helps make it shorter, I guess. How long does it take to read it, out of interest, guys?
I'm a slow reader, but I reckon an hour max.
I think it's like 3 days.
Yeah. 3 days. haven't finished it yet, but I get the gist. Yeah, yeah.
Is that long? I don't know, like, maybe an a hour, bit less than an hour.
I did it in an episode of Parks and Rec. What's that?
Whoa, that's 22 minutes.
Wow, I'm not sure if this is a very good way of reading a book. I'm not sure you're taking everything.
Well,
it's also.
Yeah.
I read it twice because it was so short, and I quite enjoyed it.
You read it twice in one episode of Parks and Rec.
No.
And this isn't even a joke. Is this the reason why, Tash, when you sent me a message about your thoughts on the book, most of them included Leslie Knope as a reference point?
Exactly. Because wow. I was watching Parks and Rec, and the similarities between him and Leslie Knope are so close.
That's actually very interesting. We should do more of this. Does that mean that every single other time, every other book that you've read, you've been watching Gone Girl?
Yeah, exactly. I can only consume what I'm reviewing at that minute.
Okay, that makes total sense. And explains a lot. It explains a lot. But, well, thank you, Robert Earnshaw, for writing this tiny book. And now let's do our best to drag it out into an episode. Let's see if we can make an episode longer than the reading experience. Let's read Robert Earnshaw's Ernie.
Ernie Hemingway.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. Nice. So, over the show, we're going to go into more depth about the book. We'll have a dramatic reading, a quiz at the end, and the return of an old favourite. I think it's a favourite. A listener has got in touch with another one of their moments in time. We haven't done one of them in a while, have we?
Oh.
Excited for that?
Oh, yeah. I'm intrigued.
Yeah, same. Well, I've heard it, so I'm not intrigued. But first, let's see what Amazon is saying. The book has 3.9 stars from 14 reviews. It's actually quite... I'm surprised it's had this many reviews. It seems a very obscure book, even for us.
Yeah, I'm genuinely baffled that this has more reviews than Marcus Hanneman's My Day
Premier
at
League
the
Diary.
Beach. Yeah, whatever it was called.
My Day at the Beach. Again, that's his novella. It's split opinion, by the way. It's split opinion on Amazon. Some loving the short format, some hating it. Some cannot stand it. Vic says in a 3-star review, Ernie's career is not finished, so I'd expect some more chapters in future revisions. I would prefer to pay more for a hardback. That's not really Ernie's fault that you want to pay more for a hardback. You can't blame him for that.
Why would you want a hardback for this book?
It would literally be... If you put a hardback on this, it'd be like a Ladybird book, wouldn't it?
Genuinely would. Like, the thickness of the book is about the size of a hardback cover.
I agree.
Is it as a weapon? I can't understand it.
And then Delilah, she loved it in her 5-star review entitled Amazing.
Why?
Wow. Tash is on fire.
All the references.
She's on it. She's making Tom Jones. She's got Parks and Recreation on the background. She's recording.
Oh my God. I'm sorry. I had my first McDonald's in ages today. I'm really buzzing.
Wow.
The Diet Coke, it's got me.
But then Tom Jones song person loved it in her 5-star review entitled Amazing. It's funny, emotional, and a boss man ting book. It's amazing. Yeah, read it. It's boss. Yeah, boss man ting. Boss man ting.
Wait, how many times did she say boss man ting?
Three. But wow. She said boss as well. And she said boss.
If it had only been twice, I wouldn't have believed her. But the 3-time boss man ting?
Was it boss man ting to you guys? Did you like it? Are you a Vic? Are you a Delilah? James, are you somewhere in the middle?
I want to know why you didn't use that as one of your quiz questions. How many times did you say boss man ting?
Hey, who knows? It might come up later if you keep ruining my questions. Like
I'm a bit concerned as to when this review was posted, because the night that I read this book, I did actually go out and get really drunk. I didn't leave it when I came back, did I?
You went to a Tom Jones a tribute night.
Yeah.
Delilah.
But like, Tom Jones was doing quite modern kind of stuff. Yeah, he was camera. Yeah, it was a real mixture of this. What do you think? What do you think, guys?
I mean,
Vic or Delilah?
I have to say, I like the fact that even from the get-go, you can tell what kind of book this is going to be, because not only is it really, really thin, but also on the front, there's a big sticker that you can't get rid of that says quick reads and also the price, which is literally the size of Robbie Earnshaw's face. It is like, you look at this and you go, the best thing about this book is it's really, really, really short. You'll get through it in a second.
But the worst thing, $1.99, it says on there, I paid £3 for each thing.
Jesus Christ.
I got mugged. I paid over the RRP.
The ticket touts of Robbie Earnshaw, they're finally raking it in. There are a lot of people who were like, just get out of the Robbie Earnshaw resale business.
Yeah.
You'll never make a profit.
Cash in now.
Imagine if it had been a hardback. They'd have been raking it in.
Oh.
That's true. That's very true. But you, James, you enjoy it?
Oh, perfect. Yeah. It's exactly what a football book should be. Just spot on. Everything I want in a football book. Brilliant.
Wow.
Just short, concise, easy to read.
Is that what this is boiling down to, James? Because it took you so little time to read, that's why you love it.
Just 3 days.
That's a big part of it, yeah. Okay. That's almost all of the reason.
You know that bit in Muppet's Christmas Carol when it's like he does the speech and it's really, really quick, and Statler and Waldorf are like, what was that? It was terrible. It was awful. It was short. I loved it. That's how I feel about this book.
That's perfect. I liked it too. It's basically a pamphlet, isn't it?
I only had one bugbear with it.
Oh.
And it was the number of exclamation marks.
Yeah, it's a lot of exclamation marks.
Mm. That is something you don't like. I remember that.
Yeah. I didn't like that. I also didn't like the chapter titles. Just rubbish.
Yeah, I
actually
agree.
Come to think of it, I hated the whole damn thing. Yeah.
there are quite a lot of weird errors as well. This is such a stupid thing to pick up on. There's a bit where he's like, back in this time we were in Division 2, brackets at the time, League 2. And you're like, no, that's not what that is.
He says a weird thing about his first game being against Brighton and then says it's against someone else later as well. Yeah.
If your book is so short, you shouldn't have any errors in it.
See, I think that's the pitfall of these kind of books. I think if he committed to writing a proper big ass book, as they're referred to in the business, he would have had people checking over it and making sure it's perfect. But because it's so small, he was like, who cares? It's a pamphlet.
It's true.
Or you just wouldn't remember because it was 300 pages ago.
Exactly.
Whereas in this, it's like, you just flip back, don't you?
You're like, wait a second. Yeah.
There's no room for maneuver.
That is how people sit down at the end of their careers and they say, what do you want to write? You want to write a novella or a big ass book?
I wish some of them wrote less big ass books.
A little bitty butt book. A tiny butt book.
Talking about quick reads, I think we should mention, much like we did when we did the Alan Hansen one, some of the other books in the quick read series.
One of these should definitely have been an Alan Hansen.
Yes, I agree. So there's Going for Gold, which is a book about Wales's leading athlete. I think they're all Welsh things because it's by a Welsh publishing house of some sort. But there's also one called Why Do Golf Balls Have Dimples? ?
Very short
Wendy
book.
Sadler.
Just a page.
Yeah, it's just a Wikipedia
just
article.
Just a sentence.
That is the Alan Hansen one, I'm guessing, right?
Yeah, that's
James?
The one. Yeah.
Have you ever wondered why golf balls have dimples or why your hair goes frizzy in the rain? Scientist Wendy Sadler has the answers in her book of weird and wonderful facts. It's that kind of thing.
One of them she says is, why does toast always land butter side down? Because it's heavier. I could do this.
Yeah, but why do golf balls have dimples?
Aerodynamics.
Yeah, probably has something to do with that. Air holes.
So that the little man inside of the golf ball can breathe.
And why should you not put an egg in the microwave?
Yeah.
It's actually too soon to laugh about that, guys.
Yeah, it's too soon. It's too soon. Too soon to laugh at microwave egg girl and her horrific face. Anyway, what were we saying? Oh, yeah. I'll tell you what is good about this book, though. I'll tell you what is very good about this book. The fact that it kicks off with an Oprah Winfrey quote. That is a... Oh, that's a highlight of the book. No foreword.
Yeah,
but there is a hole in that. There is a hole
in
that.
Okay, how so?
So are you all right if I read the quote?
Please.
So he opens with a quote in his... it's like an introduction, isn't it? And he says... It's page one. He says, I remember Oprah Winfrey once said, I always keep my feet on the ground. It's just now I wear better shoes, which is a good quote. Mm-hmm. But then like two pages later, he's like, I didn't wear shoes when I was a kid. So his quote should be, I always keep your feet on the ground, but now I have shoes. it slightly doesn't work for Robert Earnshaw.
I guess maybe feet are bad shoes in a way. That, they're like the worst.
Yeah, that's a strip.
That is a quote for the ages. Feet are bad shoes. That is, James, that is how I will start my autobiography.
Personally, I feel like feet are the worst shoes, personally. But then you're straight into the action. Within 100 pages, you've had his whole career, effectively.
I mean, he fits a lot in very, very quickly. He has a sort of sense. It almost feels like time travel. Do you know what I mean? Like the speed with which he goes through his life. Like, it starts off quite, not slowly, but it sort of starts off like an archetypal football book where it's like, I grew up here. And it's actually properly, I would say Robert Earnshaw's had one of the most interesting lives of any of the people we've read. Like,
a lot of guesswork we've got to do in between it. Yeah. But
equally, I feel like it's like jazz. It's about the words he's not saying. I feel like I was able to put in my own stories. He grew up in Zambia? Yeah, he grew up in Zambia.
Yeah, I don't think I actually knew that. I knew he was part Zambian, but I didn't know he actually was there till like 10 or something,
his dad was from Yorkshire, apparently, and then his dad died and they moved back to the UK, but they moved to Wales. I mean, that's such an interesting life, really. And so many, like, it feels like you'd want to sort of go like, and I have, that's why I have so many different identities, and that's sort of, you know, like, how does the Welsh part of me bash up against the Zambian part of me? It's such an interesting thing. But really, Robert Earnshaw's whole vibe is, I lived in Zambia for a bit, then I moved back to Wales. It was nice. Started scoring goals. It was good. A player said I wouldn't score that many goals, but I did.
And now I'm back at Cardiff City. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Good night. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's absolutely it. You've been a wonderful audience. I've been Robert Earnshaw.
Yeah, it is very much like the speed with which things go. That there isn't time for like dramatic stories. There isn't time for like for over-egging the pudding. It just goes so quick. Also the decisions to spend time at certain points. There's a two-page period, and you have to remember, two pages in this book is 50% of the book. That's 2% of the book, genuinely. In real chat, that is 2% of the book. He talks about how he was upset that he was on the bench against Crewe in the last game of the 2002-2003 season because he wanted to break a goal record. He sort of sits there being like, oh God, I really, really wish I could get off the bench. That'd be good. For like two pages in huge font. And then, like a couple of pages later, having said, you know, it was great, we went up in a paragraph, literally, like, as a paragraph, he says, it was really, really good to get promoted. Happy about that. Literally, about 20 pages later, he goes from staying up with West Brom in the Premier League to playing at Nottingham Forest, which is a gap of 7 years. He does that in two pages.
Yeah, I know, it is incredible.
Have you read The Time Traveler's Wife? And the way that you sort of veer through time in that, and there's a bit where you get to the end of the book and you're like, you're years in the future, and she's sort of like, I can't actually remember it that well, but there's like a bit where he visits her later on and she's much older than she was, and like, you feel like this genuinely feels like that. You sort of, him at Nottingham Forest, you're like, you've aged so much, and yet just a second ago you were you were a boy playing in the streets of Zambia. It's quite emotional.
I know what you mean, actually. When you see people's lives fly forward, I get sad of that in films and stuff. You see, if you see a biopic of someone's life, even if it's not particularly sad, I get sad.
Yeah. Oh.
Well, that, and also Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story, which is a parody of Walk the Line. At the end, I always feel sad because you've seen the whole guy's life on screen. Not a real guy, but I get sad watching.
Well, it is when they rush over stuff that is, I would argue, because I'm not a Cardiff City fan, as exciting as, if not more exciting than, the Cardiff City stuff.
But at least you can see why he didn't do it. So this book. I think we mentioned it's in 2012, and obviously it is just for Cardiff audience reasons. So there's a reason why.
Oh no!
Periods when he leaves and before he comes back to Cardiff and his great return years later, there's obviously that's
I can
know
see
why
that,
he does
but
it.
it's just so brutally quick that you are
There was a bit of it that really reminded me of, you know, the Destiny's Child song Survivor.
Of course.
Where it's like, thought I couldn't breathe without you. I'm inhaling. Thought I couldn't see without you. Perfect vision. And he's got like two pages where he's like, you thought I couldn't do this, did it. Thought you couldn't do that, did it. And I was reading it to this song in my head.
And Robert to Earnshaw. A Leslie Knope quote. Yeah.
So you were listening to Destiny's Child, watching Parks and Recreation. How is it?
I am a multi-talented lady.
But you're right. It is literally two pages. And it is mm-hmm. just like... went to West Brom, fine. Went to Norwich, loved it. Went to Derby, didn't like it. Went to Forest, that was okay.
And then suddenly he's gone from being like 25 to being 33. It's like his entire life has just zoomed past him.
It is.
And also, very quickly, the West Brom thing, right?
Yeah.
That, when they stay up, that is one of the greatest like moments in Premier League history. That is
was it the Great Escape?
That's the Great
was that
Escape.
When he was
there? That's when they was were it? Bottom of the Premier League at the start of the day, and then they, due to results going their way,
yeah, they when Brian up. Robson was there,
it is,
yeah, they went an incredible run. They were bottom at Christmas. Bottom at Christmas. The first ever team to stay up at. From
but also,
at
like at the beginning of the day, they were bottom. It's incredible.
True.
And like, yeah, I'm not going to argue with a person not spending like pages and pages and pages on his football stuff, because, you know, great. I'm really happy that we've done this very quickly. It's just quite like the speed with which he was able to go, that was that, that was that, that was that. I sort of, it feels like the football equivalent of Marie Kondo in a way.
Yeah, sort of, I know what you mean.
You're sort of like, just lose the stuff that isn't relevant. Let it go.
He probably could have got rid of, I know what you mean. He could have at least mentioned that, as opposed to mentioning a League Cup game against Boston United on page 58. I think the West Brom thing would be more interesting, you know, overall than seeing that.
Oh, actually, also, there's another bit that he could have got rid of, where he spends, again, two pages, 2% of the book, talking about, after he scored against Germany, the amount of times he turns to his friend and says, "What have I done?" And his friend says, "What have you done, Ernie?" It is genuinely two pages where they just go, and we sat on the bed and I said, "What have I done?" And my friend said,
"So you say, my friend, this is my favorite part of the book, which you're getting to get rid of. First of all, that made the book dangerously short. Secondly,
oh no, I'm not
secondly,
saying get rid of it. I'm just saying, yeah.
His friend is James Collins, the big ginger centre back, and they're best friends. And it's when Robert Earnshaw scores against Germany, like you say, against Oliver Kahn, on his maybe his Wales. It's not his debut. I don't think it's quite early on, at least in his career. And it reminds me, they just lie on Earnshaw's bed together, staring at. They're so happy with each other, staring up at the sky, going, "What have you done, Ern? What have you done?"
That's all they can say
till 5 a.m. It's so sweet. It's like Wayne's World when they go lie on the car outside and look up at the airport.
Or it feels like, have you seen Luca? It feels like that in a way. Sort of like two little boys really like, you know, having this really special relationship where they just sort of ask each other questions. There's also a bit where they, having stayed up till 5 a.m, saying, "What have you done, Ern? What have you done?" They go to the Asda cafe where he gets recognized by people. Oh, yeah. And then at the end, he does these autographs. And then Ginge just says to him, "What have you done, Ern? Again?" And they start again. If a waiter hadn't
tell us
been
more
like,
about your Asda food.
If they hadn't been interrupted by a waiter, I'm sure to this day Ginge would still be saying, "What have you done, Ern? What have you done? What have I done? You're right, maybe, Ginge. What have I done?"
Maybe this book was a 300-page book, and they just took out all the time. He wrote it in real time. Bit about James Collins. Who knows? Maybe. Anyway, well, Robert, well done for writing a very quick book. Jack's got a few notes for you. We can get it down to 50 by the end of the episode, I'm sure. Moving on, the book. He has a great time at Cardiff City, as I'm sure. The reason he's written this book is because he has a great career at Cardiff City. He starts off fairly down the leagues, but then he kind of moves his way up, thanks a lot to a chairman coming in. And Tash, I know that you particularly love this chairman.
Yeah, so our Ernie, our hero, he's kind of, you know, mooching around. And then, as fate would have it, he seems to be a big believer in fate. Did you notice that throughout the book? He always references, he thinks things happen for a reason. And unstoppable force meets a movable object when he meets Sam Hammam, who's got my favourite name.
That is a very fun name to say. That is a fun name to say.
I'm sure that's a Dr. Seuss Hammam character.
Yeah. I think everyone who meets Sam has a bit of a strange relationship with him, but they have a very sweet relationship because Ernie just seems completely baffled by it.
Yeah, so he's the chairman, right? He comes in at this point to invest in, and he moves them up the divisions.
He invests in Cardiff City and he moves them up the divisions, and everyone speaks really highly of him. And Robert says at some point, I know it's the manager and the players who win games, not the owner or the chairman, but he really gave us the tools at the start. Money was spent and he made sure that the resources were there to improve us, not just keep us ticking along. And that's kind of different to how we hear most footballers talk about the guys in suits, isn't it?
Barry Fry wouldn't be saying that about Cam Brady.
No way.
Too busy moving the ball, Sam.
But I think that the reason that he's got such sweet feelings to him is because he's an absolute nutter.
He is. He's one of the biggest characters we've had in the book so far, for sure.
He really is. I mean, there's not much room for many large characters, but he's definitely the sort of Cheshire Cat of the book. But do you guys know about what he does with the contracts? You must have read that bit and really enjoyed it, right?
Yes.
Because that, for me, was an absolute treat. This is why I read the book twice, because I wanted to see if I'd missed any. you know, he says everybody in Cardiff and Wimbledon and throughout the game knows a few stories about how different Sam was. And, you know, I'd heard about the balls or the willies he tries to get everyone to eat. He was like the originator of the Bush Tucker trial
back in the day, right? Let's be clear. These are animal balls and willies he's getting into it. Yeah, he's not like not writing a contract here to nosh off.
Like sheep. Are they sheep ones? Sheep testicles?
Sheep testicles. Right? Yeah, I think that's right.
He gets Spencer Pryor to eat a sheep testicle in his contract.
Even on his Wikipedia page, Sam Hammam's Wikipedia page, it says he's well known for this behaviour.
He's got like a title heading, sheep testicles.
Yeah.
Drop down menu.
Criticism thereof. Yeah.
I just want to know where there's a restaurant that serves sheep testicles in Cardiff, because he says they go out to a restaurant. He says it.
Yeah, that's
he says
true.
They go out to a restaurant.
Maybe he had a steak in this restaurant. I was just like, I'll write it into into all the contracts.
Why is no one eating at my restaurant which serves sheep balls?
Sheep testicles are us.
Yeah, but the contract stuff was just so sweet, because for some reason they seem to be signing contracts all the time when they're there. He says he signed 4 in 1 year at some point, because they keep trying to slide things into it. And Robert never got caught by it, but he said that every time he had to check with a fine-tooth comb to make sure he hadn't slipped a clause in, but having to do a bungee jump in your boxer shorts at half-time. He says he got away with it, but Spencer and a few others had to undergo some challenges, but he doesn't tell us what they were.
Why is it always Spencer Pryor?
I don't know.
What's he tell? Spencer Pryor, like, has 15 contracts in 3 years, and they're all equally ridiculous.
Didn't get paid once.
He never says what these tasks were, and I would love to find out. If one of them's eating sheep's testicles, and the example he gives is bungee jumping in your boxes, they've got to be...
Yeah,
be some weird ones. That is a criticism of the book, I would say. There are quite a lot of times where you're like, just give us one more anecdote there.
That would be good fun.
You change your tune with this. Actually, you know what? Another thing I hate about this book is
it's really shit. No, I'm just saying, just like a tight, like he says, like, this guy was a real joker, and then doesn't say why. And
yeah,
like, just a little bit. I know you have to flash forward and go and age terribly in 2 pages, Robert, but you could give us a tiny bit of, you know, spice there. And I think that's true of Sam Hammam as well.
I like him because he's not really interested in football, and everything that I've read tells me that Sam is not interested in football. Like, do you know the reason that he got the shares in Wimbledon? Because he moved to Wimbledon because he liked tennis. He didn't move for the football. He said,
yeah, he's
he
from Lebanon,
wanted,
right?
Yeah, yeah. And he always wanted to live near to Wimbledon for the tennis, and he couldn't buy anything to do with the tennis because it was all already owned. So he bought shares in the football club. That's how he got really into funny. Football. So I think he just plays these pranks to keep himself occupied.
Yeah. Oh, God, this football's so boring.
Yeah.
I wonder how many of these guys I can make eat sheep's testicles.
Talking to Sam Hammam and Wimbledon, though, so a character who's popped up in one of our episodes before returns, who's brought in by Sam Hammam. We mentioned him in the Craig Bellamy episode, right? That man is Bobby Gould, and I regret to inform you that he's wrestling people again.
It is legitimately bonkers that we have read 2 books in the past 12 months where Bobby Gould randomly wrestles people.
Me and Bobby would be wrestling on the floor with the other boys. We're in stitches. It's a good job he's injured me. And then it goes from wrestling to he races after him when they're doing drills and starts tickling him all the time, right? Is it tickling? I swear it says he was tickling him somewhere. I think he loved me a bit. He didn't chase anyone else. It's getting a bit weird. Actually from that point. But yeah, I think he's he tickles him. I'm sure I read about that somewhere.
I think this book does this to you, James, where because there's so little in it, you start adding in your own words. You're like, yeah, then I tickled him, and then we had a little sleepover and a slumber party. A little pillow fight.
I remember that he tickled him, for sure. He definitely tickled him.
He's reading between the lines, I think.
Yeah. Maybe. I could be. Maybe I imagine. I can't find it there now, but I'm sure he used to tickle him. Oh, yeah,
it
we go.
Was weird. It was weird.
In Bellamy, it's definitely like, we got to wrestle. That's how we'll prove ourselves to be men. Yeah. This one feels more like, we got to wrestle because it's fun. It's fun to wrestle.
You tickle me now. No.
Alright, we'll move on from that before we get some more.
Well, actually, James, you're not going to like what I'm about to do here, but I'm going to have to ask you to remain in your seat. I've decided that I am taking over the dramatic reading today.
What?
It's happening! The coup!
So wait,
the coup that we started.
First of all, Jack takes away my presenting responsibilities. I have to sit there like a lemon for an episode, and now I can't do the dramatic reading.
Well, I tell you what, you can cue the dramatic music.
Oh, don't pity me. Cue dramatic music.
This is like when a leader is deposed and the military say, go on, say a few words. Go on. You enjoy it, don't you? Give us legitimacy. And they have to go, cue dramatic music.
What's the story? What's the name of the story?
So the name of the story is Robert Earnshaw has a flat tire. It is as thrilling as it sounds. So I remember the first day Sam, came to Cardiff as the new owner. We were all in training and we were told that he'd come and see us after lunch and introduce himself. Just the usual pleasantries, that's what I'd expected.
After a lunch of bull penis.
However, what Sam did to introduce himself was anything but the usual. He paid a kid a fiver. Oh, sorry. He paid a kid a fiver per car to come into the car park and let a lot of tyres down. £5 per car.
I was going to say, do you think Sam thought maybe like two or three people were in that day? And the kids saw that there were like, the whole squad's there. He's like, well, brilliant, here we go. That's the quid's in.
That's the transfer budget done.
I really hope he created a contract with that kid. Right. Here comes the collector's winnings. Well, if you read the small print, you have to eat a sheep stick. It's part of the contract. There's your money.
He paid the kid a fiver a car to come into the car park and let our tyres down. Not the tyres on one car, or even a couple, but every single tyre on every single car in the car park. So we did our training, finished up, and Sam came in to see us and said how happy he was to meet us.
I don't understand this prank.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
I don't know. We had a few words, all shook hands, and then we got ready to head off. I can't remember who got to his car first, but he was really cheesed off because all his tyres were flat. There was no puncture, just four flat tyres. And then the next guy got to his car, took a look at the state of the tyres and realised the same had happened to him. I got to my car and sure enough, four flats. It was crazy.
Where's Sam in this situation? This is what I want to know.
I think he's sort of up in an ivory tower watching them.
Yeah,
but that is a terrible prank as a result, because you need the ha ha, I've taken down your tires, because otherwise they're just like, what has happened here?
Well, you would probably just think some local ute would come in and like slashed them all, wouldn't you?
And it's true, some local ute has come in, but at the behest of a mad owner. So weird.
Yes, I agree.
And leading on from that, these pranks, because it's pissed me off, and I'm sick of hearing about rubbish football pranks, and I need to get it off my chest.
Well, can you wait till after the break?
Oh, what are you going to do in the break? Shave a bit of my hair off? Put my shin pads in a blender? Whatever.
The structure of the episode is falling down at the seams.
I'm losing control. But don't worry, there'll be more Ernie after the break, including a football book club first and an angry James Baljan, I guess.
Yes.
Hi, we're Football Book Club Podcast. And we need your support now. Let's drop the appeal music. Hi everyone, James here, and I just want to tell you about the brand new Football Book Club Club, which you can join to receive bonus weekly episodes, access to exclusive member events, and your very own Football Book Club bookmark, all for the same price as a used copy of Darren Huckabee's 2007 book, Hux. So if you enjoy the podcast and need to hear more afterwards, head to patreon.com/footballbookclub. Enjoy the episode. Welcome back to Football Book Club, where we are reading Robert Earnshaw's Ernie. Right, do you want to go then, James? Do you want to, get it off your chest?
Yeah.
He has been, by the way, we did the 5 minutes break. We just sort of sat here and James was stewing. We sat here in silence.
Pacing back and forth.
Yeah.
I can't believe it.
Just cooled me down and it worked, but now I'm thinking about it again and I just need to talk about this. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of these pranks. Honestly, I'm so sick of them. They're not funny. They're just mean. Why are you cutting laces and putting ketchup in boots? That's going to take time and effort and money to sort out.
And
the championship is a hard league to win anyway. You need to be focused on getting results, winning your games, getting into the Premier League. I wouldn't actually mind the pranks if they were original and funny, like that one Matilda did where she put super glue on Daddy DeVito's hat and it got stuck to his head. That's funny. That's a funny prank. Or the one I used to do with my brother where I'd put loads of pens in his bed so when he got into bed to go to sleep, he was like, oh, what's this? Loads of pens in my bed. That's funny. It's both funny and it wouldn't derail a promotion challenge.
Yeah.
Like cutting laces and ruining football boots and being horrible to someone just because he's got small calves isn't funny. It's just
oh my God, wait,
bullying.
You can't insult the calves. Yeah. The calves prank is brilliant.
You've got to give, give some context on this. So
it's
James,
just bullying.
What is it? Because obviously Tash's was about a chairman getting involved in this.
This is just player pranks in the dressing room.
Player pranks.
Which we've heard time and time again, which players think they're hilarious. Ruining football boots. It just annoys me. It really annoys me.
And does Robbie or Robert or Rob, whatever we're calling him.
He doesn't participate. He's straight-laced, Robbie.
Does he mention this in his book as well?
We rarely hear from the people who do the pranks, do we?
No, we don't. It's always, they were such a joker. They were such a big character. And then the pranks are terrible. he says that, I think it's, is it Graham Kavanagh who tells him early on in his career, don't mess about? Is that
right? Yes, it is Graham Kavanagh. Yeah.
Yeah, so he never participates in any of it.
That's true. That because he said something. He said, like, just think, people are looking up to you. And Robert's like, I've never thought of that. People look up to me. Oh. What?
And then immediately after, they make fun of him for having grey hair. So like, in return for this sage advice.
Shut up, Grandpa.
Yeah. So this is the Game for a Laugh chapter, I'm guessing you're upset at, James.
Yeah, it is, yeah. Another terrible
which is
title.
Where he talks, which is my favourite kind of chapter in a book, where it's just... Yeah. James, all right. Where it's just
so angry.
It's like when we did the feature before, and they don't make him like that anymore. But it is like it's a whole chapter of just like this guy was the king of the banter, all those kind of things, and they are always so naff.
Rubbish.
They are naff.
Rubbish.
I agree. Anything stick out in particular? What was the calves thing?
I can't remember the name of the player. Can you?
It was Leo Fortune West.
Right. Yeah. So he was like super tall, like 6'5", but he had tiny calves and a really high-pitched voice. No, like, it's not, you know, I can laugh at it, but I'm not going to say it to his face. I'm not going to be like, oh, where are your calves gone, you tall prick? You got
no calves. The exact line is, who's nicked your calves, Leo?
Which is quite funny.
Which makes no sense.
I feel like in this day and age, you could probably get like calf implants, no?
Yeah, probably. Probably. Like,
that is not where I expect that sentence to go. There's something you're going to say, in this day and age, you know, people would be more sensitive. No, calf implants, apparently.
My favourite bit about Leo Fortune West is his description of him, which was, he was a massive guy, but his voice sounded like that of a funny little boy.
Not a regular little boy. A funny little boy.
What a funny little boy. Yeah, that feels like something which...
It's just that footballers have no originality, and I think, as we've established with other books, that sort of fancy dress costume efforts are really basic and they come up with the worst pranks. And like, they've got so much time to come up and plan with these things as well. Like, there's no excuse for rubbish ideas.
It's true.
At least like players like Balotelli setting fireworks off inside a house was original and probably quite funny. But...
I don't know.
I like when Gazza got an ostrich out. That was quite funny. He took an ostrich to Spurs training. That's kind of fun.
You're right though. Like, time plus money should equal good pranks.
Good banter.
It'll be fine if they weren't sort of talking about us. I'm going, oh my God, he was king of the banter, and then it's just the worst shit you've ever heard in your life.
It is like Joe Jordan's son. They cut his shoelaces up. That's it, basically.
And put some ketchup in his boots.
Yeah.
Okay, I think ketchup in his boots is funny, personally. I think that is good.
I'm with you on that. Perry Groves would agree as well.
For it to be... I agree the pranks are terrible. I just would like to say right now that I think a well-executed ketchup in the boots where there has to be just the right amount of ketchup so that no one notices before the foot goes in, but enough that it squirts out. That is a good prank.
That is
well executed.
That is funny. Cutting laces is just...
Cutting laces is bullshit. It's terrible. Nothing funny there. And also because you have to... There's a long time spent...
Nobody ever talks about the kit man in all of this. He's like, for exactly. God's sake.
Sitting there with a tear rolling down his eye.
And he's getting the flack for it. He's going to say, I need to order some more shoe laces. It's like, why? It's so many. It's like, it's not me. They're cutting them. Rests with you, mate.
We need more boots and we need more ketchup. I don't want to explain why. I think we should do like a spreadsheet to work out how many pranks, like if the more pranks you do you get more points in the championship?
Okay, that's interesting. Mm. So whoever the biggest pranks are, we'll record how many pranks they're doing in this.
Yeah, and does it actually help them or hinder them? Because I think there's an argument to be said that it could help them.
I would say Perry Grozy pretty high up in that. He did a lot of pranks.
And he won the Premier, not Premier League, he won the First Division. So
it's true. And Anders Limper, did Anders Limper put things in someone's foreskin or did he have them put in his foreskin? I can't remember. Now that was a good prank.
That's a good prank.
Now that's a good prank.
Much like the ketchup in the boot, you have to work out exactly how many stones to go in the foreskin funny.
That's not a prank, that is assault.
That is assault.
Anyway, that is a tough board. Like I said, last word.
Jermaine Pennant came up with a really good prank, actually. And I'm not a big fan of the guy, but he came up with a brilliant prank, didn't he?
What was that?
Leaving his car running for 2 weeks. That's very funny. That's very funny.
Forgetting you had a car in Zaragoza. Yeah, that is a good thing. That is a good one.
Is that like a prank on David Attenborough or what? Like,
yeah, prank, yeah. Prank on all of us.
That's a prank on future generations, really. Yeah.
The prank was that we read his book. And that was the sad thing. Yeah. But final word on footballers' pranks, James?
Just bullshit.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Anyone have an out of context, Robert Earnshaw?
I had one and it was about ketchup in a shoe. So.
Don't. Start with that.
I've got one, but I almost have to explain it after I've said it.
Okay. It's against the rules, but as long as you know that.
Well, I don't add context. I add a reason why I find it funny. Okay. We went about 7 or 8 or so games into the season like this, with me thinking I should be playing, and my family, friends, and anyone biased on my favour thinking, why is Ernie not playing? I like this because it's
I know why you think of this. Because it's... why... Where's Poochie? Is that what you're thinking?
There we go, yeah.
I knew it'd be a Simpsons reference. And when Poochie isn't on screen, people should be asking, where's Poochie?
If Robert Earnshaw isn't on the pitch, all the other Cardiff players should be saying, where's Robbie?
That's so funny. Yes. That is exactly the kind of out of context stuff I'm here for. I've got one. I thank the Lord he never asked me to eat shapes dangly bits.
That's my one I've got there.
Everything that happened to me started to make much more sense after I swapped shirts with Steven Gerrard.
That's a good one. Actually, interesting. My other one was going to be one thing I've always tried to do, if this doesn't sound too cosmic, is to predict the future.
Yes.
So, yeah.
I know we're out of context, but I'm obsessed with this bit of the book where he talks about the idea of thinking ahead as if it's revolutionary.
Yeah.
Now, I texted you one of these lines where he said, he's talking about how he scores on instinct, but however, I do try to pre-plan the odd goal.
Yes.
What are you?
Yep.
That's just training.
I reckon my guy is into astrology, and I reckon that if I add him, do you guys know what CoStar is? You're not.
I don't want to.
CoStar is like an astrology app, and you can put in people's details, and it tells you how compatible they are. I reckon me and him very compatible.
Interesting.
I might put his details in and see if we.
There we go. Well, let's know how you get on with that. Cool. In the much the same way James hates football pranks, I hate astrology. The same way. Fuck stars. And James, out of context?
Yeah, I got one. Being shut in with the school's pet, a crocodile.
I forgot about that. That is also good.
That is a good choice.
We barely talked about Zambia. It's out of context, but
I think that's a great incentive to... get your work done, and I think they should use it over here.
Again, very Miss Trunchbull.
That is very that Matilda. Is
yeah.
Very Matilda. Oh, and
is Matilda on in the background at the moment? Are we just...
But yeah, that Zambia stuff is interesting for the 2 pages, and then it's straight on to when he's 32. Anyway, I want to flow into our final topic of this, just because it's something which... I think this book is fine. I think it's fine. I think it's so short. It had basically no impact on me whatsoever, apart from some of the stories about crocodiles and things. I like them. However, one thing I will give credit to Robert Earnshaw is that he is an innovator. And look, we've done this podcast for a while. We've read a lot of books, all of us. We're all quite long in the tooth. We feel like we've seen everything probably to come, but there's still tricks up their sleeves, these footballers, because he's done something that I don't think we've ever seen before. Earnshaw is the first person in the book to go into the art of celebrating, which is something which no one has ever done. And for the very few pages in this book, he saves a lot of this book to talk about celebrating and somersaults and his favourite somersaults and why he started to somersault. And it's a new thing. It's quite interesting. Do we enjoy that?
Yeah,
because I think it's also the way he talks about it. It's like an insight into culturally how football was celebrated when he grew up. And then he sort of brought that with him to Cardiff.
Yeah.
And I thought that was quite interesting.
He's very...
I liked it.
Yeah, he's very... Because I vaguely remember the celebration. He was like it's a forward flip, basically.
Yeah, and yeah, it's like a Bamiyang.
He also did that weird one when he used to go to the crowd and like maybe do like a fake like gunning thing or something like that, or like a bowing thing after he did that. He doesn't mention that celebration.
I forgot
about
that.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. I think that was a thing. Was that Earnshaw?
I think that was Earnshaw. Was that Robbie Keane?
No, Robbie Keane did the flip, yeah. the somersault, and then the ba-boom.
Robbie Williams.
I get all the Robbies confused.
Yeah, Robbie Williams.
Robbie Savage.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Robbie off
Robbie
Arsenal
first.
TV.
But, yeah, it's we basically get four pages on that, which is basically a chapter.
Well, he talks about his favourite celebrators. But
yes,
he mentioned
he's a connoisseur. He's a connoisseur of celebrating.
He name checks Ryan Giggs in it. And I was thinking, Ryan Giggs doesn't really have that much of a notable celebration,
well,
did he?
He runs around with his with his shirt off.
That's one goal.
Yeah, right. That's true. That's true. And I can see that you're going to get angry about that because it was against Arsenal, Jack. So I'll move on from that. But you know, he is. He's a connoisseur. He talks about how his, he recalls when he was a kid, some kid said to him, "Whoa, you really know how to score goals," which is a really great line in there anyway. And then he starts thinking about, maybe I should do some celebrations. So he does the somersault and he goes into loads of depth on it, how it basically helped him get noticed as a kid, which was really interesting. He thought maybe that made me help me stand out more than some other players doing that. And he talks about like my celebration is unique and I don't think anyone else does it. I mean, I do think he overeggs it a bit because it is just literally a forward flip. What he does.
Yeah, just of all.
I can't do it either, but it's true, you do. But it's not like Loire. He used to do big ones, didn't he, and stuff like that. Yeah. I think he does go a bit over the top.
He's more like one of those toy dogs that you sort of wind and hit the wall, isn't he?
He is a bit like a little toy dog.
The one thing I will say about his celebration is the way he describes it is A, very like Earnshaw, but also really scares me, where he's like, I saw a Norwegian player do a flip, so I thought I'd do a flip. So one day I did a flip, and you're like, what? You can't just do a flip. You could break your neck. He's like, no, I did a flip. It was great. Moving on.
I saw that guy go to space on TV. So I went to space.
Next day,
made a ship, flew off to space. Yeah, they took my favorite celebrations. Lee Sharpie likes all those things. And then he goes, But like you say, Jack, touching on something you said earlier about the pre-planning goals, I mean, much the same way he plans his celebrations, he plans the types of goals he scores. Like, at one point he says, before a game, I fancied scoring a goal that was from long range and from a tight angle. And then he basically goes, so I did.
I'm telling you, if this is Destiny's Child Survivor. That is what this book is.
Yeah, it could be right. It could be.
So funny.
Because I think... Robert, really, ideally, I genuinely think he maybe only got into football just for the forward flips. I think that might be the.
I wanted to stand on a football pitch and do a flip, so I did it. That's
exactly it. You want to be a gymnast, Robert, or he likes precision, a city planner. Maybe
you can't do gymnastics outdoors, so I thought I'd become a football player.
Enough of your Leslie Nope. No more Leslie Nope. And then we get to the end of the book. He goes back to Cardiff. He says it's probably going to be good. As we all know in real life, it wasn't. He stayed there for a year. Then went off to Canada, I think. Or he might have gone to Maccabi Tel Aviv after that.
Maccabi Tel Aviv, then he went to Canada.
Sure. There we go. Not good for Rob, the Robster. But did this
Ernie
book
Hemingway.
Change you? Ernie Hemingway. Did Ernie Hemingway's novella change you? Jack.
I actually think it did. It changed how I think I'll read another footballer's autobiography and I'll keep thinking, like, this could, A, be shorter. And you're just so concise and so, like, to the point that I think it makes me more... I feel like I'm going to be more assertive now.
Mm.
I'm just going to... If I want things, I'll just have them.
Cosmic, you know? Order them into your life. That's, like,
yeah, I'll just go, you know what? I want a sitcom. I'll have a sitcom.
Yeah, Mumbo jumbo. Anyway, not that you get a sitcom. That's possible. More the stuff. Yeah, sorry, Jack.
Prepare to have many shoes filled with ketchup.
I'm going to cosmic order James to... What can we prank him with?
Be my guest.
All your shoelaces.
Be my guest.
All your tires will be down.
Yeah. Well, and I'd like to see you try.
May every bit of plant in your mouth turn to sheep's testicles.
May your mercury go into retrograde, James.
Oh, that's a horrible one.
How dare you say that to me? Oh, it means, okay, it's a block party song, right?
It means bad news, baby.
James Balgian, how about you? What do you think?
Yeah, it did change me. I learnt about the life of Robert Earnshaw in less than an hour and his whole career, and I learnt a bit about crocodiles in Zambia, so yeah.
Well, you didn't learn much about crocodiles in Zambia. You learned about one crocodile in a school in Zambia.
The use of crocodiles in one school in Zambia.
Yes, as a pet. As a school,
40 years ago,
we had stick insects in Stoke.
Yeah, it's not bad.
We had alligators. It's not bad.
Yeah.
You better do your homework, otherwise you'll just have to spend time with the stick insects. It doesn't really work.
And Tash, you enjoy the book? Change you?
Yeah, I really liked it. I thought he was good fun. I would definitely go and get a pint with him.
There we go. Score out of 10?
Ooh, 8.
Bloody hell. Bloody hell!
I mean, I didn't love it.
No, no, no! You said it.
Are you saying that's an underscore? Or
no, I'm not saying it's underscore. I wasn't generally angry at Tash. I was just saying it was for comedic effect.
Is this going to be another Michael Owen, and you're going to give him a 2?
Yeah.
Let's do your score now, since we've changed the whole dynamic of this podcast today.
My score. Oh god, everyone's taking over me now. I would say 4. It was a 4. It was fine.
That's not a book. Ludicrous.
It's not a book. I learned about as much as I do from like a takeaway menu that comes to the post.
Ludicrous.
It's so tiny.
How dare
James,
you?
James, that is incorrect. Takeaway menus do not have sheep's testicles on them. Unless
you're going to the wrong takeaways, my friend.
One place in Cardiff.
James Balgian, what are you giving it?
8.
What? Jack?
I'm so tempted to say 9, but just to annoy you, I've actually got to give it a 6. I think, I'll split the difference. But I think it was good. I thought it was very good.
Okay. So that gives it I definitely brought it down. Apologies, but that got 26 divided by 4, 6.5, which puts it second place in our leaderboard. So finally, someone's overtaken Andy Gray. So that's good. That was the second best book we read this series. Oh, also...
indictment of your book selection.
Yeah, definitely. But talking about that, we've read a lot of strikers this series as well. I was thinking Vardy, Andy Gray, Earnshaw, Rooney, Owen, Hasselbaink, exclusively strikers.
Mm-hmm. We've read.
Weird.
Mad.
And I've just read.
I was thinking about Vardy at the start of this book, actually, because
the move up
Robert
the league.
Earnshaw said he. Where is it? He said that he grew up surrounded by ducks, chickens, and rabbits. And I was like, Jamie Vardy would have hated that village. There'd be none of them left. He'd have killed them all.
But, Get away from my pregnant wife!
I'm talking to strikers. I've just finished reading the book that we're building up towards this series, in case you forgot. Darius Vassell's Road to Persia. I've read it.
Yep.
And you'll find out what I think soon. I've given it to Jack. Jack's got it now, because as we know, there's one copy in the world of Darius Vassell's The Road to Persia. So don't lose it, Jack. And then Jack,
I'm
have you started reading it?
I'm about that. I have not yet, and I'm panicked about it now.
Okay.
Oh God, I'll get on it.
Hey, this is my way.
I've got a baby.
All right. You got it. Yeah, so does Vassell. That's it.
Okay.
That's a boring book.
So yeah,
he wrote exactly. Right, time for the quiz. This week, you're all named after people who helped shape Ernie's career. Tash, you're Robert's strike partner. Robert? I keep saying Robert like that. Yeah, it's technically what he's called. Robert?
Robert?
You're Robert's strike partner, Peter Thorne, or Thorny, as he's also referred to as. Jack, you're Bobby the Tickler Gould. And James, that's got an eerily like quiet response. And James, you're Oprah Winfrey. So, question number one. Shout out your name when you know the answer, as always. What two types of fruit trees did Robert have in his garden in Zambia growing up?
Bobby the Tickler Gould.
You got it out, yep.
Was it banana?
Banana is one. 1.2.
Yeah, that's the one I knew.
I'm going to guess mango.
You're going to guess incorrectly. You're frozen
thorny
out.
Thorny pineapple.
Thorny is correct. Pineapple is correct. Sorry. Thorny. You're correct. You're right.
Pineapples
basically.
Are thorny, yeah. though. So, yeah.
That's true.
That's true. That is a good
or
point.
Or prickly pear.
That is a good point. That is a good
or
point.
Or a pawpaw.
Number two. What kind of factory did Earnshaw's youth team, GE Wales, play alongside?
Oh, the tickler, oh. Bobby Gould. Bobby Gould, the tickler.
Sounds like a Batman villain.
Yeah, listen here. I'll tickle you all the way down, boy. That famous bit in Batman.
Yeah.
Isn't it sort of Boeing?
Stop stalling.
It's a plane.
Yeah,
it's a plane. Planes and stuff. Yeah.
It is aircraft.
It's a bird.
It's a bird. It's a plane. Oh, it's that evil Superman, my villain, Bobby the Tickler Gould. Doesn't like that.
Okay, question number three. What Scottish club did Robert get loaned to in 2000?
Bobby the Tickler Gould.
I think I heard Oprah Winfrey first.
You did hear that. Now I've forgotten. Greenlock? Greenock?
Greenock Morton. Yeah, I'll give Greenock. You that. I'll give you that. I think is it Greenock? I really wonder if it was pronounced that.
I think it's Greenock.
Okay.
Is it? What is it spelt? Greenock?
Sorry, Scottish listeners. Apologies.
Yeah. Oh, God, we're in trouble with them already.
Yes. Question number four. What was unusual about Cardiff City's match against Tranmere Rovers at the end of the 2002-2003 season? This is interesting. Oh, it is interesting.
Is it?
It's not interesting enough that you guys notice it.
Old Billy, old me, Gouldy the Tickler.
Yep, Gouldy the Tickler.
Did the floodlights fail?
Not correct. No, that's not interesting enough for us.
Everyone's tyres were down in the car park.
Thorny.
Yep.
Was there an alligator there?
There was an alligator. That was it. Alligator got loose on the Tranmere pitch. No, the correct answer was Tranmere lined up with Cardiff's current physiotherapist playing in their starting lineup.
That's not more interesting than the floodlights failing.
I didn't know that was allowed. Sean Connolly was his name.
That's not
Sean Connery.
Sean Connery.
Wasn't it just a coincidence? It's not that they were like, hey, we're down a player, can you...
No, I know, but it's still a pretty weird coincidence for someone on your staff to be playing against you in a league match.
Do you know what's a weird coincidence? The lights going out. Spooky.
All right, Tickler. All right, next one. That didn't go down well. Let's see how well you remember the two pages on his non-Cardiff career. Who was Robert excited to play alongside when he moved to Nottingham Forest?
Oh, Oprah Winfrey.
Yes.
Oh.
Andy Cole.
Andy Cole is correct. And Oprah would be cool. That puts you on Jack and Oprah and the Tickler are on 2 points.
Oprah and the Tickler is a great film that I'd watch. like Ant-Man and the Wasp, Oprah and the Tickler.
And the final question, all to play with this one. Who wrote fellow quick read publication Why Do Golf Balls Have Dimples?
Oh shit, it's like
Is it Kathy something?
Incorrect. Anyone got a guess? Where
is this going?
Wendy. Yep.
Wendy. Williams. Wendy Williams.
Wendy. Wendy Sad.
Wendy
Sad. Sandbach. Wendy Sandbach.
Sadler is correct.
Sadler.
We will give it to Sadler's, Thorny.
He's an interesting fact. More interesting than all of those facts. Sadler is my actual blood name.
Is it?
Oh, God. But how does one find out our blood name?
Long story short, when my granddad died, my dad realised he was adopted, but he didn't know he was adopted. My granddad was adopted, sorry. Then he had a look and found out our actual blood name was Sadler. Cool.
Sadler.
So I kept Bowden. So that tells you all you need to know.
That is the
I was like, oh, my dad was like, I found out our real name. I was like, oh yeah, if it's something cool, I'm going to change it. Because Bowden is a nightmare for everyone. Everyone gets it wrong. And I was like, what is it? He was like, Sadler. I was like, I'll keep this ridiculous name.
50 whatever episodes we've had. That's the most you've ever learned about you, James, I think. Yes. Thanks
for
that.
Did you know Oprah's real name is Orpah?
No.
But someone spelt it wrong once early on in her career and she kept it. So that you and Oprah are the same, James.
There we go. You and Oprah are the Orpah Gangnam Style. As a reward for drawing, you all got 2 points each, guys. You did very well. You get a moment in time.
Yeah.
I'm so excited for this.
I told you about this earlier, the little moment in time. We're bringing it back. We haven't had one of these in a while. This is the segment where our listeners get in touch to tell us about a chance encounter that changed their life. And here's what happened when I spoke to our listener, Liam Francis, about his. Liam, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Very, very excited. Thank you, James, for having me on.
Oh, not at all. Where are you calling us from today?
So it's actually 10:45 at night in Melbourne, Victoria, Australia.
Oh, my word. We've broken Australia.
Big time.
People talking about Andy Crabb on the street all the time and stuff like that. Yeah, mate.
Oh, everyone's walking sideways, bro. Like, it's Andy Crabb all over the shop.
That's great to hear. That's great to hear. So, Liam, I gather you've got a life-changing story for us today.
I do indeed, yeah.
Well, we're more than ready. Let me cue in the stirring music. And Liam, when you're ready, tell us your moment in time.
So my name is Liam Francis, and I served Biddy Sharp at H&M in Meadowhall, Sheffield.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one. Tell us more, Liam. Tell us more.
So it was the day after Sheffield United had a parade around the city of Sheffield for getting promoted from League One to the Championship. Uh-huh. And two gentlemen came to the till to buy, I remember very specifically, plain white shirts with a V-neck and some trainer socks. Yeah.
Okay.
So I was like, what are you buying these for? You going on holiday? I was like, yeah, we're going to Vegas.
Their holiday clothes were just white V-necks.
I mean, I think he bought a multi-coloured pack of V-necks. It was like, it wasn't David Beckham in 2005. Sure. So I mean, it was like very basic stuff. And I asked, like, go to Vegas, I'll come. Is it a stag do or what? It was like, nah, we're celebrating what? I've got no idea who these are at the time. So like, he goes, promotion. And the taller bloke goes, I'm Simon Moore. I played in golf for Sheffield United this season. And who are you, sir? And he goes, my name is Billy. And I look at him like, you're not Billy Sharp. Goes, yeah.
But at least you called him sir. I'm impressed by the respect. What happened? Was Billy Sharp upset?
Not at all. Just so happened that a friend of mine called Sid, who was born and bred in India, and this is genuinely true, moved to Sheffield because he fell in love with English football and Billy Sharp was his idol. And I print off a bit of receipt and I got the goalkeeper and Billy Sharp to sign for my friend Siddharth. Happy birthday from Billy and from Simon.
Nice. Oh, what a lovely present. Oh, you must have
just so happened those few days at H&M, the escalators had broke. So four or five like old Sheffield ladies come up to me like, are these escalators safe to use? You know, when they aren't moving. And as one of the old ladies who asked me this question was trying to go down the stairs, she was like taking close precaution, holding on to the side rail just in case they move. We were seeing Billy Sharp behind her in a hurry to get back to the sesh because like he just got promoted going, you get a move on. That's like, that was my last time seeing Billy Sharp, was getting angry at some random old lady from Sheffield because she's walking down some broken escalators too slowly.
Wow. But if it hadn't happened, you never would have met him. And I guess it changed your life thereafter, right? Is this what, did this somehow lead for you to going on your own traveling? You were like, if Billy's traveling, I want to see the world too.
If Billy Sharp can go to Las Vegas, I can go to Melbourne. Yeah. That's what I was thinking at the time.
Did he ever come back to H&M Sheffield?
It got a bit big time after that, do you know what I mean? Like, I never saw him again, but they got Championship followed by the Premiership. I heard he went to the White Rose Centre in Leeds. That's when he hit it big time.
Right.
And I haven't seen Sid in a few years, but that's the last photo we had. It, back in India is now. He had that bit of H&M receipt on the wall, Billy Sharp's autograph on it. So hopefully it made an impact on not just my life, but people around the world.
That's generally quite moving. That's quite nice. Usually it's just someone saw Martin Keown yell at his kid in a train station or whatever. But Liam, thank you so much for sharing your moment in time. It was amazing, and I'm glad that a chance encounter with Billy Sharp has had such a lasting impression on you, on Sid, and on Billy.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Not at all. Is there anything you want to say to the other guys?
Other James, stop being so miserable for once. Jack and Tash, keep it up. You guys are great.
Oh my god, what a zinger right at the end.
He's not going to be happy when he hears this current episode. Not at all, baby.
There are two things I love: Billy Sharp's autograph and pranks by footballers. Now to listen to tonight's episode of the Football Book Club.
I can see you were quite moved by that. That was the Sid stuff.
That was great.
Yeah.
What year did that happen?
2017, I think you said.
Oh.
Yeah, 2017. Wow. I spoke to him. He was in a hostel in Australia while he was chatting to me. It was great. We love your time chatting. And if you've got a moment in time, if you met a footballer and it shaped your life and took it off in all kinds of crazy directions, get in touch with us. And
it has to be as good as that.
It has to be as good as that. That's, that's,
yeah. We're not going down after that.
We're not going
down
after that.
That was high level.
Yeah, yeah. If you've got one, though, get in touch with us on Instagram, on Facebook, on Twitter. We're at Football Book Club on Instagram. We're at Footy Book Club on Twitter. Send us your thoughts, your author footballer puns, your chant ideas. If you can't wait 2 weeks for an episode as well, make sure you join the Football Book Club club, where you receive 20 minutes more Football Book Club every Monday, plus a Football Book Club bookmark. We've got a great episode lined up for you next week. And we're meeting someone who in the Football Book Club world is like us meeting Gandhi or something. It's someone. They mean a lot.
It's big.
It's big. It is big. We were meeting this week, so get excited for that. Head to patreon.com/footballbookclub to sign up. Actually, it might not be, we might build it up too much for that, but it is. Join the club.
You're gonna meet Gandhi. That's what you're gonna hear. Gandhi on this podcast.
Gandhi back. Yeah, so I made that sound like sexy back, but just I'm so delirious. I've been recording for too long. That's all for this week's book. But in a fortnight we'll be with Carl Anka. We're gonna chat to him about his book You Are a Champion.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, thank you for organising it. Or
no, thank you for calling you a champion.
Yeah, okay, oh, it's all right. No worries. But that's it for today. That's it for Ernie. That's it for our little novella. Any last words?
Yeah. If you've got any, if anyone's got any more feedback for me, it's not welcome.
Keep it to yourself.
And just after he bared his heart to you about where he came from, then you call him miserable. How dare you? How dare you? Opened his heart. Oh well. Bye everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Football Book Club. It featured James Bug, Jack Bernhardt, Natasha Frisco, and James Balgen. It was produced and created by James Bug. Thanks to Robert for writing the book, but where are they all now? Well, Robert Earnshaw went on to play in Israel, Canada, and Blackpool before retiring in 2015. We're all looking forward to the 3 pages of book he's written about that. Sam Hammam sold Cardiff City in 2006 in a multi-million pound deal that probably required Peter Risdell to eat a sheep's testicle. James Collins is still in Asda saying, "What have you done?" Spencer Pryor will now no longer sign a contract without his lawyer present. And Ernest Hemingway wrote some of the greatest books of our time, including A Farewell to Arms and Loud, Proud and Positive, The Gary Monk Story. The music Hills Behind is the work of Silent Partner and is using the Creative Commons 4.0 license. We'll be back in a fortnight. Until then, bye-bye.